Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, welcome back to another Christmas special from The Delicious Legacy, the world's most scrumptious archaeogastronomical podcast out there. Join me for another adventure in the tastiest recipes from the past out there. And again, since it's Christmas, we are going to check some traditional Greek recipes and a short history of Christmas in Byzantium and Constantinople. Merry Christmas to everyone, and I hope you have a lovely festive period. Happy New Year, happy holidays, and if you're feeling festive, cozy and Christmassy, then why not join The Delicious Legacy on Patreon? From $3 a month, you get all the podcasts, early and ad-free, with extra content, and a wealth of information and recipes and extra musings and many other goodies. So yeah, join us on Patreon and make your Christmas and mine even better. Your support means a lot to me, and with more patrons, it means I can dedicate more time to create better content for you guys, plus create videos more often and exclusive for you. And so now, without further ado, let's go to our special episode about Christmas. On this one, I've got it in three parts, more or less, where we're going to see my childhood memories of Christmas and our traditions. Christmas in Byzantium, in Constantinople, in the palace, in the emperor's palace. And you will also have some amazing recipes from Greece, traditional Christmassy recipes from north of Greece, and one from Corfu. For those of you on Patreon, I'm going to write the recipes down and post them as posts on Patreon so you can have them and you can print them or use them while you're cooking. Because I know, obviously, I'm explaining the recipe step by step, but I think it's going to be better if you have them written down. And now, enjoy our episode. So on that note, I've combined this episode with some elements from previous years, where I talk about traditional stuff from my area and my Christmas as a kid growing up. So yeah, let's get on with today's episode. There's always a Lent in the Greek Orthodox calendar. I did talk a lot about the Easter Lent in previous episodes, which is the most important one, to be honest, in the Orthodox calendar. But even before Christmas, this big happy celebration for Christianity, there is one Lent too. This lasts for 40 days. My grandmother, the daughter of a priest, used to fast the whole period. I, on the other hand, never lasted that long. For those of you who don't know, or who are new to the podcast, or haven't listened to the one about Easter, the Lenten period is generally a period of abstinence from meat, fish, dairy, like milk, butter, cheese and eggs. And so whenever I've tried fast, usually I only manage a week or two at the maximum. Who can live without cheese for that long? Or alternatively, someone might complain that, oh, you're so spoiled nowadays. You have everything. Back in my day, we used to eat just stale bread and water. Anyway, I digress from my subject, which is Christmas food and Christmas holidays and these festive celebratory dishes. Anyway, I always try to do some Lent fast a little bit, for a little while, like a week or two. Not because I'm pious or religious or even for diet and health reasons, but because I am just really greedy when holiday season comes, when Christmas comes. I want to be able to eat all the food, stuff my face with everything on the table. I want to be eating non-stop from 24th of December until the 6th of January. There's so many foods to be eaten. The Greek festive table is a cornucopia of tantalizing dishes, a feast. And it's not merely this on the 25th. This is the norm for 12 days over the Christmas period. So let me tell you a little bit about my childhood Christmas. The stuff we used to do with my family, my extended family, grandfather, uncles and all. The sight of a porker carcass, hung upside down, with head and all, never filled me with any dread or disgust. It just always meant a delicious charcoal roast was on its way the next day. Our Christmas feast, a party meal for all. Yes, our mothers and sisters would be a bit upset with the face of the animal. That was the main point of contention between the men of the family and the women and the girls. It always felt a bit yucky for them. It looked too real, too gruesome. But we would never have the animal without the head. The elders always used to say, a decapitated animal is very bad luck. So off it went, the whole animal, to the spit, true nose to tail eating, way before the fancy, expensive London restaurants discovered the concept. We all have certain persistent memories from our festive family gatherings, don't we? Sometimes good, sometimes a bit iffy, let's say. And yeah, some of us have all these burnt turkeys and or semi-frozen turkeys that never cooked and so on. No, not in my family at all. Christmas was way too important to be left in chance or to have a failure in the kitchen or on the barbecue for that matter. Everything was very strategically organized and with precision and effort from all parts involved. I know as we get older, we perhaps tend to over-romanticize the years of our childhood and get this warm and fuzzy feeling when we recall them, don't we? And yeah, I don't want to make it overly too perfect or too sweet and sickly sweet. Our Christmas were amazing as kids and so on. But even when Christmas were filled with screams and sounds and big family arguments and rows, I do still get a little bit nostalgic when this time of the year comes around. Almost always try to have fun. In my mind, the most indelible picture of Christmas holidays from my childhood was the day before 25th, the Christmas Eve. But during the daytime for us, in my hometown of Veria in northern Greece, outside in my grandmother's yard and garden with my dad, my uncles and the army of male cousins usually, preparing the animals for the following day's feast. That was, of course, the celebration, 25th, and 24th was the preparation. And that was equally as fun and amazing for us. It's a day that all the cousins and all the uncles we'll gather together to my grandfather's house. First time during the first semester of school, I wouldn't have seen them for 3 months or so. So that'll be amazing and have fun all together and so on. So we're outside in the yard, and I know Greece and outdoors might mislead you, my dear listeners. And you think, oh, such a pleasant time, pleasant activities and fun, ta-ta-ta. But I can assure you, that at the end of December, in mainland North Greece, the winters are bitter, cold and miserable. And that was especially true back before the catastrophic climate change got hold of our winters. Of course, now there are winters even more unpredictable, and each one is more weird than the previous. So sometimes it's really cold, sometimes just wet, sometimes the weather is almost summery. But this was our time. It was men's time, primal and important. It felt like the time we were bonding as a family as well. My granddad giving instructions, my dad and his brothers, my uncles, and me and the male cousins listening and preparing and grabbing stuff. All of us doing some important work. We, the younger generation, the next masters, learning the secrets of barbecue, the secrets of spit roast and the juiciest, most succulent hog in town, while having fun over the preparation of the animals. As I said, most importantly, it was the place to bond. Cousins become friends of a similar age. Those days would shape our mindset, our lust for conviviality, our desire to spend all of our free hours cooking and sharing the bounty of the fire pit with those who we love the most. We also connected with our roots, with our ancestors, with our grandfathers in the mountains, and the rebels who lived wild lives on those unconquered mountaintops of Greece the past centuries. Well, that's what we thought. And that's what we pretended it was true anyway. That was what we were doing. We would have had one or two hogs, depending on how many family members were planning to be around. So those were hung by their back feet from the roof of a shed on makeshift hooks. Perhaps in addition, we would have also a goat kid or a lamb too, for the sake of keeping everyone's taste satisfied and for a bit of variety. First step would be to remove the precious innards and keep them, carefully keeping them for the infamous offal kebab called kokoretsi. Then we would proceed by cinching the skin off the pork, of the pig, with a very DIY contraption made with cotton wrapped around a handheld mini souvla, like a metal skewer, a long metal skewer, doused in alcohol, and then set alight to remove any hairs. And lastly, on this first part of the process was washing of the carcass with a hose to remove any remaining hairs and all that malarkey. So these carefully choreographed rituals with specific steps taken the same way year after year. The spits, souvlas as we call them in Greece, were then prepared, soaped, scrubbed, cleaned with vinegar and hot water. The animal was then put on the spit, from the back, through the inside of the belly, and out through the neck, and carefully again through the head. One could hear the gentle crack of the skull, the minimal hole on the forehead. I know it's gruesome and shocking, and perhaps too much information here, but nevertheless, it was another skill we had to acquire. Precision and specific amount of power and strength was needed. Too much, and the whole head would crack in two. Too little, and obviously you wouldn't get through with a pointy end of the skewer. Then carefully tied on with wire and prongs, protruding the meat and keeping the back legs together. Next was the seasoning. On our pork chain friend, we did a generous mixture of salt, pepper, oregano, garlic and lemon slices. And then season the insides, and then sew the belly with a massive needle and thick butcher string. We'd let the spit roast in this dry inside-out marinade for about 12 hours to really soak up the flavors. They were kept in a secure place, of course, like a larder, in an ambient temperature, horizontally, as when they would be when on the spit cooking. Yes, it was outside, in a larder, no fridge, but it was winter, after all. And especially at night, the temperature could drop really low. I do not recall ever having anything going wrong with that process, or questioning whether we needed to buy a walk-in fridge to keep the meat safe and fresh. One could easily imagine that we were feeling damaged and exhausted after a whole day out in the cold weather, carrying heavy barbecues from the basement, the buried treasures from last year, unearthing and revealing stories of past revelry, washing with cold water the animals and freeze our little hands off, But for the most part, it was pleasure, pure joy and ecstasy. The feeling of belonging, I guess. Part game, part serious. And of course the transformation of the raw materials and the space itself to something worth celebrating about. All were playing important role here. And here we were, in a small corner of the old town of Veria. And we defeated the elements and adverse conditions, and had fun. Those festive days, including Christmas Day and fun we had, now I feel that they are all stored in one place in time, separate from the rest of the chaotic memories, recollections from our childhood that seem to surround our hazy heads. These are kept safe and secure, always there to comfort me, no matter how bad things can be, when I close my eyes and I'm there, in my Yaya's house, no one can reach us. These memories are protected from any harm. I'm sure the shenanigans of Christmas days are all too familiar to most of you. The drunken dancing and non-stop eating is similar to all cultures, I believe. The season varies. Of course, the barbecue ritual here isn't a quick steak and sausages type of thing. Although both were welcomed and included in the early stages of the day. This gave us stamina to continue. This, as you understand, is a slow affair, requiring patience, grit, deep knowledge of the charcoal, the fire, and its capricious character, which needs to be controlled and adjusted even after we had a couple of glasses, and I put a couple of glasses in air quotation marks, of the local grappa. We call it Cipuro, the distilled spirit made from grapes after you make wine, which we consumed, of course, to warm up our cockles in the morning. It's cold outside, for no other reason, believe me. On average, we were out there in the cold, crisp winter morning and the contrasting heat of the pit for about 7-8 hours, perhaps. And of course, I'm not going to bore you with the details here about the fire and everything else. After all, there are so many programs out there about pitmasters and barbecue and how to do your own fire. Let's just say, most of us, most of the time, we would fight over the tastier, first-cooked parts of the spit roast. And if you can guess what it is, usually it was the testicles. Or alternatively, the bit of meat at the back legs when the bones started to split and the skin was very, very crunchy. But the Greek Christmas doesn't end there. One didn't persevere with the Lent for 40 days. Okay, none of us did, to be honest, to just get one day of feasting. It hardly seems a fair exchange. No, there's more, a lot more to come. Back to my immediate family's home, i.e. my mom, dad, brother, me and our other Yaya, there's a lot more wholesome cooked food waiting. Both mom and grandma can't help themselves but cook a mountain of food, as if we haven't eaten for decades. And, or, alternatively, if we are waiting for a long-lost family to appear, numbering 50 members or so. Classic Greek family. But once the spit rolls are ready and it's time to eat, we will eat for lunch, let's say, up in grandmother's house, the whole extended family, and then we'll take the remains, go back home, and eat dinner again with the moms and the rest of the family, or different family members from the other side of the family. Now, the celebratory dishes that Yayas and moms made at home are many, and pork is the main meat, as I said, and there are countless dishes with it. The reason, traditionally, and more to do with all the time, was what we call Gourounohara, which is the most popular tradition in most regions of Greece, or pig joy. It takes place around Christmas. this is the slaughter of the pig, which has been fattening for a year. And traditionally, there has always been a time of revelry. Not that the pig was joyous with the prospect of its sacrifice, this is certain, but the joy for the village folk. The felled animal will be savoured all winter long, usually as the only source of meat, traditionally, of course, right? Hence, the tradition calls for pork on Christmas Day, either whole on the spit, as my family did, or cooked in various different ways. Another thing is called Christopsomo, which is a festive spiced bread, made at Christmas time, of course, and traditionally eaten on Christmas Eve. It was always made with the most expensive ingredients, highly sifted white flour, sesame seeds, and the spice mixture such as aniseed, orange, bay, cinnamon and cloves. On top, other dishes that are a must and adorn every festive dinner table are stuffed cabbage leaves, which I'm going to give you a nice recipe from Corfu, either with veal's mince and spices, and a thick apple lemon sauce, or with pork mince, pork tenderloin cooked with chestnuts and apricots, a capon or cockerel stuffed with Swiss chard, rice and wild fennel, and mountains of nut and honey syrup-soaked cookies called melomacarona, and kurabiedes, another dessert with almond shortbread-type biscuit related to numerous Middle Eastern biscuits known as kurabiye, found in the Ottoman Empire and even older in the Persian cuisine, and countless pies. Of course, savory, meaty ones for New Year's Eve, eaten late, around midnight, just before we go out for an all-nighter. Or sweet cake-like pies for New Year's Day lunch. Vasilopita, which is prepared for Saint Vasilios, Saint Vasilis, our version, the Greek version of Santa Claus, with a coin inside, hidden, and whoever got the piece with a coin gets good luck for the year. So this, my dear listener, in a very roundabout way, was part of my childhood Christmas memories and part of the tradition, the Greek traditions of Christmas that I wanted to bring you all along on this episode. Now for the next part, enjoy some excellent traditional recipes for Christmas and New Year's. There is the shepherd's meat pie, which is made up in the mountains of all over Epirus, which is in northwest Greece. And this is made with lamb and phyllo pastry. In places like Thessalia, which is central Greece, this is made with pork or rabbit. Up in where I'm from, we use beef and leek. And on all of these, you can insert a coin for good luck, actually, just like Vasilopita. In the island of Lesbos, there's a very skilled, highly complicated phyllo making pie, a traditional sweet and savory pie, which has consecutive layers of phyllo, which give this unique pie the festive character. And this is for New Year's, cheese and spice New Year's pie from Lesbos. And for this, obviously, you make the phyllo with fennel seeds and flour and baking powder and salt and sugar and olive oil and butter. And the filling is kefalotiri cheese, mizithra cheese, you have fresh ginger, you have ground cloves, you have ground cinnamon, freshly grated nutmeg, ground allspice, and you garnish it. Obviously, you have sesame seeds to garnish it, and you bake it like this. Another incredible recipe here. Now it's time for a traditional Greek recipe, Christmas recipe. And this is a sweet that we do, that every household do during Christmas, and this is the melomacarona, basically syrup-drenched nut and spice cookies. And this recipe is from Peloponnesus, and it's made with olive oil rather than butter or margarine or other disgusting oils. So for this, we make the cookies, so we have a dough, and we make a syrup, which we then, after we cook the cookies, we put them into the syrup. Okay, for the syrup, you need 1 cup of sugar, 1 cup of honey, half a cup of water, 1 medium cinnamon stick, and 1 wide strip of lemon zest. For the cookies, and this will give you 40 to 50 cookies, you need 3 to 3.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, half a teaspoon of ground cloves, 1 cup of extra virgin olive oil, half a cup of sugar, half a teaspoon of baking soda, half a cup of fresh orange juice, a quarter of a cup brandy, like Metaxa, for example, that we have in Greece, and one cup of chopped walnuts, and then the zest of one orange grated. There are a few different variations on how to make them, but first make the syrup. So bring the sugar, honey and water to boil in a medium-sized saucepan. Add the cinnamon and lemon zest and simmer over medium heat for 10 minutes. Let it cool completely. For the cookies, sift together 3 cups of the flour, the baking powder, cinnamon and cloves in a small bowl and set aside. In a large bowl, beat the olive oil with the sugar until creamy. Stir in the baking soda into the citrus juice and add the oil and sugar mixture. Add the brandy, walnuts and grated zest and continue mixing vigorously until combined. Slowly add the flour to the mixture, beating vigorously with a wooden spoon until a stiff dough forms. Preheat the oven to 160 degrees Celsius. Lightly oil 2 large baking sheets. One at a time, break off pieces of dough the size of a big walnut and shape into a small mounted oblongs. Place 1 inch apart on the baking sheet and bake until lightly browned, so about 20 minutes. Remove from the oven and submerge in the cooled syrup to soak for a few minutes. Drain them, if that's desired, on racks and then sprinkle on top some finely pounded walnut crumb. And they are delicious, trust me. I'll be back after this short break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Liutprand, Bishop of Cremona, who visited Constantinople, acting as ambassador to Berengarius, region of Lombardy, in 949 AD, was a young man, not at all practiced diplomat, and he had been deliberately starved of funds by his own monarch. But he was welcome as a friend at the palace of the Emperor of the Eastern Roman Empire. Liutprand describes one of the entertainments at Christmas dinner at the palace as thus. A man came in carrying on his head, without using his hands, a wooden pole 24 feet or more long. A foot and a half from the top had a crosspiece 3 feet wide. Then 2 boys appeared, naked except for loincloths, around their middles, who went up the pole, did various tricks on it, and then came down headfirst, keeping the pole all the time as steady as though it were rooted in the earth. When one had come down, the other remained on the pole and performed by himself. That filled me with even greater astonishment and admiration. While they were both performing, their feat seemed barely possible, for, wonderful as it was, the evenness of their weights kept the pole up, which they climbed balanced. But then one remained at the top and kept the balance so accurately that he could both do his tricks and come down again without mishap. I was so bewildered that the emperor himself noticed my astonishment. He therefore called an interpreter and asked me which seemed to be the more amazing, the boy who had moved so carefully that the pole remained firm, or the man who had so deftly balanced it on his head that neither the boy's weight nor the performance had disturbed it in the least. I replied that I did not know which I thought Thaumastoteron, or more amazing, and he burst into a loud laugh and he said he was in the same case. He did not know either. There are no fewer than four descriptions, extending chronologically over three centuries, of how the emperor and his guests dined in the house of the 19 couches on Christmas Day itself. The first description is a theoretical one. It forms part of the Book of Ceremonies, whose compiler was Liutprand's host on the occasion we described above. Here, we are told of the procession in which the emperor was conducted from St. Sophia to the palace. We are told, with that fulsome acclaim, the monarch was greeted on this special day by those who attended him at dinner, and we find confirmation that his guests would include people from beyond the empire, including Franki, or Franks for you and Agharini, or Arabs. But we are not told what went on in the dining hall, unfortunately. In the second description, who comes from Liutprand, one on the first of his visits, as we've seen above, he describes us the tricks and the dance and the tricks with the long poles. He also tells us by that time the practice of reclining at dinner had become exceptional even at the palace. On the day when our Lord Jesus Christ was born in the flesh, 19 covers are always laid here at the table. The emperor and his guests on this occasion do not sit at the table as they usually do, but recline on couches, and everything is served in vessels, not of silver, but of gold. And after the solid food, fruit is brought on 3 golden bowls, which are too heavy for men to lift, and come in on carriers covered over with purple cloth. 2 of them are put on the table in the following way. Through openings in the ceiling hang 3 ropes covered with gilded leather and furnished with golden rings. These rings are attached to the handles projecting from the bowls, and with 4 or 5 men helping from below, they are swung on to the table by means of a movable device in the ceiling and removed again by the same fashion. Now, slightly earlier than this description, we have the narrative of the Syrian hostage, Harun ibn Yahya. And he spent one Christmas dinner in 911 as a guest to the emperor. He tells us, this is what happens at Christmas. He sends for the Muslim captives, and they are seated at these tables. When the emperor is seated at his golden table, they bring him 4 gold dishes, each of which is brought on his own little chariot. One of these dishes, encrusted with pearls and rubies, they say belonged to Solomon, son of David. The second, similarly encrusted to David. The third to Alexander, and the fourth to Constantine. They are placed before the emperor, and no one else may eat from them. They remain there while the emperor is at table. When he rises, they are taken away. Then, for the Muslims, many hot and cold dishes are placed on the other tables, and the imperial herald announces, I swear on the emperor's head that there is no pork at all on these dishes. The dishes on the large silver and gold platters are then served to the emperor's guests. Then they bring what is called an organon. It's a remarkable wooden object like an oil press and covered with solid leather. 60 copper pipes are placed in it so they can project above the leather, and where they are visible above the leather, they are gilded. You can only see a small part of some of them, as they are of different lengths. On one side of this structure, there is a hole in which they place a bellows like a blacksmith. Three crosses are placed at the two extremities, and in the middle of the organ. Two men come in to work the bellows, and the master stands and begins to press on the pipes. And each pipe, according to its tuning and the master's playing, sounds the praise of the emperor. The guests are meanwhile seated at the tables, and 20 men enter with cymbals in their hands. The music continues while the guests continue their meal. On another description, it tells us that on the 9th day of Christmas, the emperor would be entertained at dinner in the house of the 19 couches with traditional Gothic songs and dances, which are all carefully set out with accompanying translations in the Book of Ceremonies, compiled under the direction of the Emperor Constantine the VII Porphyrogenitus. All this is well and good, but it doesn't tell us much about the food. What we have about food from Theodore Prodromus is the following advice for December. December, I hunt hares, festival food from the wild. I fill my dishes with tasty partridges, and I celebrate the feast of the Nativity, the greatest feast of the Word of God. Take generously of all foods, I say, and reject the melancholy cabbage. This is the only dietary manual that drags the festival of Christmas. Venison, beef, hare, kid, wild boar, wild goat, and gazelle, and all game birds, said Hierophilus the Sophist in the 10th century, are ideal for a December banquet. Eat lean meat, well cooked, hot, with a spicy sauce, and you can have suckling animals if you like, and fish except the wet ones. And by wet we mean wet in terms of the theory of humours. Pungent flavours, including pepper, leeks and mallow. Among pulses, not beans or chickpeas or lupins. Among fruits, you must keep off dates and bayberries, but plenty of other remain. You can have 8 baths in the course of the month, so long as you soap yourself with aloe vera and a touch of myrrh. Finally, drink lime tea from time to time, a decoction that is of the flowers of the lime or the linden tree. I suppose for the emperor and his guests and his hostages in the room of the 19 couches on the Christmas day, they would have some spiced wine as aperitif, conditum, a Latin name of the traditional liquid delicacy. The Byzantine Greeks adjusted their conditum under medical advice, incorporating different spices and herbs for each season. In winter, you might add spikenard, pepper, cinnamon, cloves, and honey. Then the meal proper might begin with some fish dishes in classical way, perhaps tuna, swordfish, bream, bass, red mullet. Fried fish was recommended in winter, coated in flour and with a hint of mustard. Now for the delicious meats. Theodore Prodromus has told us, hare and partridge. It's clear from Hierophilus that other game might be substituted as far as the dietitians were concerned. But the wild boar that he mentions would have offended the Muslim guests. So the imperial table might have venison and gazelle, which the latter was a real delicacy in medieval Byzantium. The game was to be served hot with spicy sauce. But what kind of spices? Winter instructions are given by Hierophilus under January. The partridge might be best served with mustard, cumin salt, and a dip of wine and fish sauce. Other spices to be used in winter were pepper, caraway, cinnamon, and spikenard. That's very exotic. I think it comes from Nepal. On the side, pea or lentil soup, flavored with salt, olive oil, and cumin. Among vegetables, leeks, carrots, and perhaps wild asparagus. And a little dish of roasted garlic to rub on your bread, the finest bread of the palace bakery. Mallow, also recommended, which might be served as a garnish for the serving dishes. We know that fruit was served, and we know that the fruit of the emperor's table were kept chilled in an underground cistern until the moment it appeared in the dining room. The wine would be mixed fairly strong, half and half for winter. The wine that came to Byzantium was world famous, and on the feast day, the sweet wines of Crete and Samos would be much drunk and celebrated on the table. So, let's check some modern traditional Greek recipes for Christmas. And I've got a few for you. Well, unfortunately, these recipes, they're very labor intensive. It's Christmas, they're celebratory, and they involve lots of different ingredients. It's not easy, I'm afraid. Christmas dinners are always special. So firstly, we have the stuffed cabbage leaves with minced pork and an egg lemon sauce. This is a traditional recipe from the island of Corfu, and it's one of the best ones I've tried. And we have similar dishes in the north of Greece, of course. So for 8 people, you need obviously a nice, tender, whole, big green cabbage, which are winter vegetables, and obviously, you know, Greek stuffed vine leaves, but this is more of a summery thing, or if you can preserve them, you preserve the young, tender vine leaves collected from vineyards in May. The most tender and delicious fresh vegetable in Christmas is cabbage. So for 8 people, get stuffing of 150 grams of smoked bacon or pancetta. Ionian Islands, and especially Corfu and so on, they have big influence from Italy, from Venice especially. They were under 400 years of Venice rule. 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 1.5 cups finely chopped onion, 1/2 kilo of pork mince, 1.5 cups of tomato. Obviously, in the winter, we'll have some canned tomatoes. 2/3 of a cup of Carolina rice, which is Greek equivalent of short grain, something like risotto rice, right? 1/2 cup of dry red wine, a pinch of chili flakes, smoked chili flakes, we call it bukovo in Greek, salt, black pepper, 1 cup of fresh and finely chopped parsley, and 2/3 of a cup of hard Mizithra cheese, which is a hard, salty, grating cheese, 5 spring onions finely chopped, 1.5 cups of chicken stock, and for the sauce now, which we'll make later, you need about 1/2 to 1 cup of chicken stock, depending the thickness, how thick we want it. 1/2 cup tomato juice, 1 egg, 2 to 4 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1/2 cup of water, 2 teaspoons of corn flour, black pepper, and 1 tablespoon finely chopped parsley. So we start with our cabbage. Get a big saucepan, bring the water to boil, and add 2 tablespoons of salt. While this is happening, with a sharp knife, cut the cabbage hard and separate the leaves. Fill another saucepan or any other deep bowl with some cold water. Plant now in the boiling water the cabbage leaves, few at a time. You have the rolling boiling water until they get a little wilted. Now, if they're very big, about between 3 and 5 minutes, that's how long you boil them. Then, once they're ready, transfer them to cold water and then in the colander. If you do that in the previous day, make sure you put the leaves in the fridge covered up, and that saves you a bit of time from cooking everything on the same day. Cook the filling. In a large frying pan, sauté the pancetta until it gets a color, about 5 to 7 minutes. Add the oil and the onion and sauté and stir for another 5 to 7 minutes until soft. Then add the mince and stir often for another 5 minutes. Add tomatoes, rice, wine, chili flakes and as much salt or as little salt as you want. Let it boil for a little while, turn off the heat and add parsley, cheese, spring onion and black pepper. To stuff the leaves, once the stuffing is cold enough to handle, start making your dolmades. The big, very hard leaves, put them on the bottom of the saucepan in order for your dolmades not to stick while they're cooking. Take a bit of stuffing and place it in the middle of 1 leaf of cabbage. Fill in the leaf, 1/3 of its surface. Wrap the edges of the leaf like a little package. Squeeze it in your hands gently so you will rid most of the liquids. Do it over a bowl as you will need this juice collected later. After finishing 1 leaf, place it in the saucepan with the joint facing down. Once you finish with the big leaves, continue with the smaller ones and maybe use 2 at a time if necessary. You will make approximately 2 tight layers of stuffed cabbage leaves in a saucepan. Cover this with a fireproof dish so they won't move around when cooking and boiling. Pour over the liquid you kept when you squeezed the stuffed cabbage leaves, and as much of the stock is needed, just about enough to cover the leaves, not more. Put the saucepan on the hob to boil, and then turn the heat down to simmer, very lowly, covered for 35 to 40 minutes. Keep checking if there's enough stock in the saucepan. Let them cool down then, completely, and then put them in the fridge for the next day. This way they will taste much, much better. So to finish it off and make the sauce, 30 minutes before you serve them, put the saucepan with the dolma on the hob over a medium heat. Let them warm up for about 15 minutes. Put them on a hot, big serving plate and cover them with foil. Keep them warm. Meanwhile, in the saucepan, make the sauce with the stock and all the liquids together, no more than 2 cups. Add the tomato juice. Boil in low heat for about 5 minutes. Meanwhile, whisk the egg, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice and 2 tablespoons of water. In another small bowl, whisk the corn flour with 2 tablespoons of water and mix this with the egg. Whisking and stirring constantly, mix the sauce with the egg corn flour lemon mixture, half a cup at a time. You will need about 1.5 to 2 cups of sauce to mix. Transfer this in the saucepan and bring to boil, whisking and stirring constantly until the sauce has thickened. Taste and correct the flavor with salt and or pepper or lemon. Pour half of it over the dolmades and keep the rest for the serving plates. Enjoy. I've got some from Northern Greece, my home area, region, where, well, generally, we tend to think that Greece is a very homogeneous country. And sort of it is nowadays, unfortunately. A population that speaks the same language, follows the same religion, hence the culture and the people and the foods and traditions pretty much are the same. As I said, this is, on one level, this is true. And yeah, it's kind of boring and bland, if you think about it, if you're growing in this kind of environment. On another level, it's not true at all. We, the Greeks, sadly forget, or rather more sinister forces sometimes, we're made to forget and leave behind our little unique traits, our different dialects, our regional dishes, our local customs and traditions, all of course for the contrived, artificial, modern, unified Greek identity. Ultimately, something like this is made up and isn't dynamic and pulsating. As a result, rather monotonous and perhaps overly patriotic, focusing on surface, not substance. And if we want to broaden it up a little bit, aside from all the local, regional Greek identities, there is also different ethnic groups that used to exist and live side by side for centuries. My local town of Veria had a substantial population of Jews, Romaniota Jews, until the Second World War. Just 60 kilometers away from Thessaloniki and their Jews, which Thessaloniki's Jewish people population formed the biggest community in post-World War I a population. In Veria, these Jewish people had a tradition stretching back 2,000 years. Apostle Paul spoke in a synagogue in Veria when he came to talk about Jesus, and he said that the local Jews there were more noble than those in Thessaloniki, for they received the word with all the eagerness. Anyway, I'm obviously digressing a little bit, and obviously Jewish people weren't the only community. For 400 years, there was an Ottoman rule. We had Turkish and other Middle Eastern ethnicities settling in northern Greece during this period. The land was in the heart of the Balkans, so the Vlach shepherds communities coming each season from Romania with their thousands of sheep and goats, Slavs and Bulgarians, Albanians and many others. This melting pot of cultures and ethnic groups inevitably gave us a richer and more drinking cuisine. In fact, it was several distinct cuisines, each one with a unique character. And not only that, we tend to forget, again, how mountainous Greece is. A lot of communities and villages and people were isolated by nature and developed their own extremely local and seasonal peasant cuisine with nature's bounty, or what leftovers were after the Ottoman governors took all the tax. Even in recent years, the last 100 years, in the 20th century, we had massive immigrations from Greeks from Asia coming and settling mostly in northern Greece and in my homeland of Macedonia and Thrace. These well-born patrician Asian minor Greeks brought with them a rich tradition of baking, sweets and desserts, plus a more heavy approach to spices, a heavy concoction of aromatics such as cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger and cumin that has now become a part of my region's culinary lore. So yeah, here are three dishes outside of the ordinary for a bit of a twist in Christmas. Beef with onions, raisins and paprika is the first one. And this one is called kapamas. It has a dozen different versions all over North Greece. Can be anything from a fragrant cinnamon-tinged lamb stew to a whole leg of lamb cooked in a large pot on top of the stove. But here, Kappa-Mats is a deliciously rich and sweet beef dish, perfect for cold winter nights. So you need about 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 1.5 kilos of bone-in beef shoulder or any other cut suitable for stewing, trimmed of fat and cut into large pieces, 6 medium onions, halved and thickly sliced, 1 heaping teaspoon of sweet paprika, salt and freshly ground pepper to taste, 1/2 cup of golden raisins, and about 1 teaspoon of sugar to taste. From here is sort of straightforward. Heat the butter and olive oil together in a large stewing pot or a Dutch oven over medium-high heat and brown the meat on all sides. Add the onions, stir to coat with the butter and oil, then add the paprika and mix all together for a few minutes. Season with salt and pepper. Add enough water to barely cover the meat. Place the lid on the pot and simmer over low heat until most of the pan juices have been absorbed and the meat is very tender, about 1.5 hours. Meanwhile, plump the raisins for 15 minutes in a small bowl of warm water. About 10 minutes before removing the meat from the heat, add the raisins and the soaking water to the pot. Taste and adjust seasoning if necessary, with sugar or additional salt and pepper. Serve hot. Another recipe calls for veal stewed with tart apples and prunes. Makes about 4 to 6 servings. You need 1/2 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1 kilo of small stewing onions peeled, 1 1/3 cup of all-purpose flour, salt and freshly ground pepper to taste, about 1.2 kilos of boneless veal shoulder, trimmed of fat and cut into stewing pieces, 2 bay leaves, 1/2 cup of chopped fresh mint, about 8 or 10 pitted prunes to taste, 3 tart green apples, perhaps like Bramley or something like that, peeled, cored and cut to 1.5 inch cubes and held in lemon water so they prevent them from going brown. So heat the olive oil in a large stewing pot, medium heat, cook the onions, stirring until golden and translucent, about 10 minutes. Remove the slotted spoon and set aside. While the onions are cooking, season the flour with salt and pepper and dredge the veal lightly in it, tapping it off any excess. Increase the heat under the pot to medium-high, add the veal and brown. Add the onions back to the pot together with the bay leaves and mint. Season with salt and pepper. Add enough water to the pot to barely cover the meat. Reduce the heat to medium-low, cover and simmer until the veal is tender, about 1.5 hour. Add the prunes to the pot and continue to simmer for 15 minutes. Drain and add the apples, simmer, covered for another 15 minutes. Drain and add the apples and simmer, covered this time for 15 minutes. Remove from the heat, remove the bay leaves, cool slightly and serve. Okay, because we're talking about Christmas recipes, I'm giving you a bonus Christmas recipe from Lesvos. Christmas pork with chickpeas, chestnuts and spices. As we said, pork is one of the traditional Christmas mainstays. So it stands to reason that a dish such as this holiday special from Lesvos would evolve with pork and flourish. The pork and the chestnuts is a very classic combination from many cuisines, especially the French. And it's a hearty affair and wonderful and perfect for any winter table. So you don't have to do it just for Christmas, but it helps. So for about 8 servings, which seems to be a lot, so half the meat and the potato and the onion quantities if you want to make less, please. You need 1/2 cup of dried chickpeas, rinsed and soaked overnight in water, about 1/3 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1.5 kilo of boneless pork shoulder, trimmed and fat and cut into stewing pieces, 4 cups of chopped red onion, you need salt and freshly ground pepper, 2 cups of peeled, seeded and chopped tomatoes, or canned tomatoes is fine, 1 heaping teaspoon of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of allspice berries, 2 bay leaves, 8 new red potatoes peeled and quartered, and 1 cup cooked and peeled chestnuts. So after you soak the chickpeas overnight, drain them. Place them in a large pot with cold water, a lot of cold water, to cover them and bring it to boil, skimming the foam on the surface. Simmer off a low heat until slightly softened, about 40 minutes. remove from the heat and drain. Meanwhile, heat a third of a cup of olive oil in a large casserole dish over high heat and brown the meat on all sides, stirring frequently. Transfer the meat with a slotted spoon to a plate, heat another third of a cup of olive oil if you need, then add the onions to the pot. Cook over low medium heat, stirring, until softened and lightly browned, 8 to 10 minutes. Place the meat back in the pot, season with salt and pepper, pour in the tomatoes and enough water to cover the meat, and stir in the cumin, allspice and bay leaves. Cover, bring to a boil, reduce the heat to low. Simmer for about 30 minutes, then add the drained chickpeas, stir and pour in additional water if necessary to keep the mixture covered. Simmer, covered, until the chickpeas are almost cooked, about an hour. Add the potatoes and chestnuts and continue cooking until the meat and the chickpeas are very tender, another 30-40 minutes. Obviously, while the stew is simmering, add water if necessary. Adjust the seasoning with salt and pepper. Remove from the heat, remove and discard the bay leaves, allspice berries, if you can't fish them out, and serve hot. Okay, and that's it. Thanks for listening. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Have a fantastic time. And if you feel festive and joyous, do help the podcast by subscribing on Patreon for $3 a month, where you get all the podcasts early and ad-free. Of course, if you subscribe to any of the higher tiers and categories, you get more stuff, more bonus recipes and podcasts and so on. And please, 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 if you love me and if you love the podcast, go on and rate and review wherever you get your podcasts from. This helps the podcast grow and find new listeners. I've been Thomas Dinas, and this was the Delicious Legacy Podcast. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.